Bonjour, bienvenue à Mapping Paris, a podcast that takes you around the city of Paris and all its different sites. Each episode is by a different student and will give you an insight onto a new place and how they approached it. From the Rosa Parks mural to the Hasard Ludique, you will discover a new way of encountering Paris.
Hello, and welcome to Mapping Paris. My name is Seth Jackson. On today's episode, we will explore a site that no longer exists in its original form. It is a site that has borne witness to the politics, strife, and violence of the long 19th century, and has reemerged today as a center of leisure, patrimony, and aspirational revisionism. Located only 12 kilometers from the center of Paris, the Domaine National de Saint-Cloud is perched above the banks of the Seine River to the west of the city. The site once played host to a famous cast of characters who used the property's chateau as both a place of residence and seat of power. The chateau has a long history in the annals of the Ancien Régime and the First and Second Empire, having been built in 1570 as the Hôtel Donnet for the wealthy Florentine banking family, the Gondis. The chateau entered into historical significance with Philippe de France, the Duke of Orléans, after his purchase in 1658. After over a century of ownership by the Orléans, the famous Marie Antoinette petitioned her husband Louis XVI to purchase the chateau as a place to raise their children so that they could take in better air. In 1785, the chateau was handed over to the Bourbon queen as she quickly began to transform it into her personal residence. A massive overhaul of the garden architecture, interior design, and waterworks went underway even in the early months of the French Revolution. In 1799, the chateau hosted another political moment of upheaval with the coup d'état of 16 Brumaire, which saw the Directoire replaced by the Consulat. Some 4 years later, Napoleon Bonaparte was proclaimed emperor at the chateau, where he and his family took up personal residence. Again in 1852, with the proclamation of Napoleon III as emperor, the chateau upheld the mantle of the imperial residence, giving host to the emperor and his family as a seat of power. It was from the chateau that in July 1870, war was declared with Prussia, eventually leading to the downfall of the Second Empire and the battle that destroyed the chateau. It is from this narrative that we can understand the chateau's significance in serving not only as a catalyst for the downfall of the Ancien Régime, but also for that of the Second Empire. The chateau's history is an integral part of the story of France. The site of the once imposing chateau is now easily accessible from Paris via the Metro Line 10. When exiting the metro, the green hill is visibly dotted with several 19th century buildings that would have been the stables, guardhouses, and servants' quarters of the estate. What is most striking, however, is the absence of the main building. The design of the domain, the configuration of the surrounding buildings, and the layouts of the decorative streets all allude to the presence of a monumental building. This unpresence is quite noticeable, as the lack of a focal point can be confusing. We are forced to ponder over what the site would feel like if the chateau were still standing. Struck by French defensive artillery during the siege of Paris in 1870, the Prussian army that occupied the heights surrounding Paris did little to put out the flames that had engulfed the residence of the then captured Napoleon III. When strolling through this garden, one is reminded of Versailles, with its long, wooded vista avenues that seem to draw the eyes to the centerpiece palace. However, the striking difference of Saint-Cloud is that this focal point is missing. The central focus point is now a dirt-laden outline of the original chateau structure, which breaks with a wonderful view of the city in the distance. As one strolls further up the hill and looks down upon the domain, the missing chateau is felt. Like a crown missing its jewel, this once great sanctuary of power feels like it has lost order and direction. While the garden and waterworks offer splendid visual breaks, their alignment seems to echo that of the once great chateau. With this lacking centerpiece, one is forced to draw their attention to the space. This has an effect on the park stroller, as the notable missing piece of the compound forces one to ask why. Why is the chateau missing? Why do I feel a sense of a loss of connection? In keeping with the project of Grand Paris and understanding that patrimony serves as an integral part of the French experience, several groups have been formed that advocate for the reconstruction of the chateau. One such group is Reconstruction Saint-Cloud, the desire to use a treasure trove of period architectural drawings and 3D modeling to rebuild the chateau as authentically as possible. The group argues that this historic site should be rebuilt to its former glory so that the public can be educated on the mass significance of the chateau as a catalyst for several defining moments of modern French history. The two notable defining moments being public upset over Marie Antoinette's purchase and lavish refurbishments that aired the flames of revolutionary spirits in the late 1780s, and Napoleon III's declaration of war on Prussia in 1870. The movement boasts that they do not need public funds to complete the project. They do, however, need approval from the French state in order to begin a project that would alter forever the Domaine National. The French Ministry of Culture's General Director of Patrimony, Emmanuel Etienne, stated that the restoration project must meet 4 criteria before the project can be completed. 1. It must have support from local politicians. 2. It must not damage the surrounding patrimoine of the domaine. 3. It must be a faithful reconstruction, adhering to the strictest interpretation of the last known architectural plans. And 4. That the construction process must be visible to the public. In the case that the above criteria are met, the project may go on ahead as planned. However, much debate has encircled the reconstruction project. Critique stems mostly from the field of conservation and reconstruction, drawing heavily on the charters of Venice, 1964, and Nara, 1994. In an essay written by the University of Liège, entitled Identical Reconstruction and Heritage Authenticity, by Claudine Aubert, the author theorizes that economic motivation should not reign as the key motivation of projects such as these. With the pressure of a consumerist society and worries over the success of such a venture, reconstruction projects may not be able to be true to their original form. The website of the Reconstruction Saint-Cloud claims that the project will draw in thousands of euros from potential visitors, and that a visible reconstruction will draw in spectators who will be happy to contribute piecemeal to the effort. However, when viewed through the lens of authenticity, Aubert argues that the marriage of authenticity and tourism is not always a happy one. The issue at hand is that of identity and true authenticity. Aubert argues that true authenticity is very hard to quantify in modern rebuildings of sites. The issue stems from that of the eye of the tourist, who aims to see a site through an authentic lens, separating themselves from others with the aspiration of obtaining the true, the authentic. In comparison to the success of L'Harmonie in Rochefort and the Berliner Schloss in Germany, this project has an entirely different identity. Since the structure has been out of the picture for some 120 years, its existence in the space is no longer deemed as integral to the heritage of the domain. Instead, its lack of presence focuses the tourist to reflect on what once was. Thus, if the authentic experience is to be attained, it is deemed more advantageous to leave the space as it is. The fire of 1870 serves as a historical backdrop for why the chateau is missing and how the space around it has evolved to adapt to that loss of a centerpiece. Therein lies the power of the missing chateau. Its lack of presence forces those who visit the domain to delve into history for answers. When visitors are brought to search for these answers, it enriches their knowledge of a site that has seen the waves of history crash upon its gardens and buildings. The lack of the chateau offers a space of reflection on its history. On the vantage point of the hill, one can see the fall of a kingdom and two empires. Within the regal and imperial gardens, the presence of power can be felt, but its seat is no longer visible. The evolution of the space as a place of cultural memory forces one to remember the chateau in all its glory. The rebuilding of such would act to threaten the obvious void left by it, an impresence that focuses the onlooker to reflect on a past seat of power that now gives way to a sprawling Parisian skyline. It is in the pursuit of the authentic that reality presents itself. While a rebuilding of the chateau would certainly enthrall visitors of a forgotten past, authenticity would be lost as the fire that destroyed the chateau.
Thank you for tuning in to Mapping Paris, and we'll see you in 2 weeks for a new episode. Au revoir.